It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Guy Raz in Washington. Neil Conan is back on Monday. Today we're talking about Hollywood and the Pentagon. A blockbuster film about the military can do wonders for recruiting, kind of like what Top Gun did for the Navy.
Tower, this is Ghost Rider requesting a flyby.
Negative, Ghost Rider. The pattern is full.
No, ma'am. This is not a good idea.
Sorry, Goose, but it's time to buzz the tower.
Every branch of the U.S. military has a liaison office in Hollywood. Officers vet scripts. The ones they like get access to planes, tanks, bases, Humvees, and ships. But there's often a quid pro quo. The military can demand changes to the script as well. When they don't like it, like last year's In the Valley of Ella, a film that had a decidedly anti-Iraq war slant, the military shuts the door. And so director Paul Haggis made In the Valley of Ella without any help from the Army. Here's a clip from the film.
I shouldn't send heroes to places like Iraq. Everything there's f***ed up. Before I went, I'd never say this, but you ask me now, they should just nuke it and watch it all turn back to dust.
In a moment, we'll talk to the LA Times Pentagon correspondent and with the Army's man in Hollywood. And as always, we want to hear from you, especially listeners who've served in Iraq. What Iraq war movies have you seen? Did they seem believable? Our number, as always, 800-989-8255. Our email, talk@npr.org. And you can comment on our blog. That's npr.org/blogofthenation. Our first guest here with us in Studio 3A is Los Angeles Times Pentagon correspondent Julian Barnes. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
You've just written an article about the relationship between Hollywood and the military. Describe it for a moment. There are actually uniformed personnel stationed based in Hollywood as liaisons to the industry.
That's absolutely right. They're sort of on a nondescript office building on Wilshire Boulevard. There's a whole floor, and every service has its own little office, the Marines, the Air Force, the Army, the Navy. And that's where the officers who vet the scripts sit, and they sit on desks piled high with all these scripts marked confidential.
So, I mean, how much importance does the military place on sort of, you know, influencing movies, say, you know, right now about the Iraq War?
Well, the Iraq War movies are very important to the military. They don't like how the war is being portrayed, particularly how the soldiers are being portrayed. And many people, not everyone, but many people within the military think that if they can persuade Hollywood to present a more nuanced picture of a soldier who served in Iraq, that will affect public attitudes towards soldiers.
I think there have been about six or seven recent films about Iraq or Afghanistan. How many, Julian, has the military actually cooperated on?
They've only cooperated on one, which hasn't come out yet. None of the ones that have come out yet. Now, most of those films didn't request help from the military. They never submitted their script. And some directors just don't want that kind of help. They feel that it may look like they're submitting to censorship.
I mean, the Pentagon has worked very hard over the past 5 years to control the message about the war in Iraq. I mean, we know going so far as of course, to brief retired generals with talking points before they appeared on television and radio as analysts. Is this the same kind of thing?
Well, the military would say no. I mean, they would say, look, we're just trying to get a more multidimensional picture out there, that we're just striving for accuracy. We're not trying to censor anyone. We're not trying to spin anyone. Hollywood directors, though, some of them have a different view. They think that the military is trying to push a positive view of the Iraq War or a positive view of how they're treating soldiers. Paul Haggis argues that, you know, a lot of soldiers have fallen through the cracks and are not getting help for PTSD, concussions, and other injuries. And he feels that putting a rosy spin on it is inappropriate.
Julian, this relationship between Hollywood and the Pentagon is not new, actually. It goes back quite a long way.
Oh, right? Absolutely. And, you know, the bulk of the movies that the Pentagon helps with are the sort of big summer action films, those kind of films that need access to tanks and planes, things like this summer's Iron Man, which the Air Force helped out with and was very pleased with, Transformers. The Army is now working for a big action film next year, The Day the Earth Stood Still. So those are the most of the time. But this sort of idea of trying to influence the smaller pictures, but the ones that may shape public opinion more, that's a more of a new idea and a more of a new priority for the military.
Mm-hmm. You've written, of course, an article about this, and you interviewed Paul Haggis, the director of In the Valley of Ella, who actually went to the military. He wanted their help, and they gave him back 21 pages of corrections. How hard is it for a filmmaker to make a war movie that requires this kind of machinery and these resources without the cooperation from the military?
Well, Paul Haggis said it was a big deal when they didn't get help because he had a very small budget. It was an independent film. And had he gotten the sort of discounted rate on a Humvee that the military can give you and the access to film on a military base, he could have saved a lot of money, done the film more easily. So it was a big deal when he did not get permission to do, did not get their help.
Mm-hmm. Our guest is Julian Barnes, the LA Times Pentagon correspondent. As always, we'd like to hear from you. What Iraq war movies have you seen, and did they seem believable? We're at 800-989-8255. Soon we'll speak with the Army's man in Hollywood, and we'll also speak with a film critic later in the hour. Let's go to the phones now. Joe is on the line with us in Springfield, Missouri. Joe, welcome.
Yeah, well, what we see here is a despicable, diabolical collusion between Hollywood and the Pentagon. And this Generation Kill coming up on HBO is a perfect example. Mm-hmm. This is all nothing but brainwashing the younger people into getting involved in these imperialistic, despicable war crimes, mm-hmm. invasions. Why don't you do a truth movie about who really blew up and pulverized those 9/11 buildings?
Mm-hmm. Thanks so much, Joe. Appreciate the call. Do you think, I mean, Generation Kill I haven't seen myself. Have you seen that, Julian?
No. I mean, it's only in... You have to get a preview. It comes out, I think, this Sunday, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, in Hollywood, as you say, I mean, when Hollywood needs the help, they need these tanks and Humvees and all these things. So the military provides it. And do they provide it at a discount?
I believe so. I mean, the other thing is, if you want to rent an aircraft carrier, there's only one place to go. I mean, there's mm-hmm. not a lot of people who have an aircraft carrier available.
Right. And do the filmmakers foot the bill?
Yeah, but the filmmakers do pay, and the military emphasizes they're not wasting taxpayers' money. They don't use equipment unless it's available. But it is this gives filmmakers access to stuff they would not otherwise have, a Stryker armored vehicle. You know, you just can't go and get one of those. You'd have to generate it perhaps through digital effects, which would be more expensive.
Mm-hmm. Julian, in your article in the LA Times, you describe how the military wasn't really able to shape the Vietnam War films, and they really don't want to miss the boat on Iraq. But they almost already have, right? I mean, they haven't really influenced any of the films that have come out about Iraq.
They haven't, but there's a movie coming out this fall called The Lucky Ones, which stars Tim Robbins, who's known as an anti-war campaigner. But this is a film that the Army is really excited about. It shows three soldiers who are coming back from the war. All are injured in different ways, but none of them are crazy. None of them mm-hmm. have been so badly damaged by the war.
And the military is, and the Army is, as you say, cooperating on this film.
Yeah.
And does that mean they actually get a fair amount of control over the script?
Well, I mean, it depends on what you say control. They did read it. They offered comments. I talked to the producer. He said that there were very minor comments in that one. Little corrections on the backstory of a character, little correction on how a uniform would be worn. but nothing major. Now, on a film like In the Valley of Ella, which has a lot of things the military objects to, that's when you get 21 pages of, oh, my God, we disagree with this.
Eric is on the line with us from Oklahoma City. Eric, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm active duty Air Force. I got back from Iraq in October, and I totally concur with your comments. The Valley of Ella speaks for a lot of the active duty folks that are serving right now and have served in the military over in Iraq and Afghanistan. It's interesting. I think you need to focus on the fact the military, any manipulation they can do, I think they will. Like the Iron Man movie, I have PTSD, and I actually had to leave the movie theater. I was physically ill in the beginning. So I've had friends who have been taken prisoner and killed. Also, the stop-loss movie I thought was fantastic because the military really is tired of being sent over to Iraq and Afghanistan. Do you think, let me ask you this, do you think in the future, because the war is going so badly, they'll have more censorship?
Julian?
Well, I don't think that there will be censorship. There is no censorship. There's no way that the military can't stop a filmmaker from making any film they'd like to. I mean, it's the filmmaker's money. It's the filmmaker's script. What they do is they provide notes and advice on something that they help out with. And they are trying to, if they see a film that shows everybody suffering from PTSD, they're going to want to show that some soldiers don't have those kind of stress disorders.
Eric, do you find that your colleagues in the Air Force concur with you that many of the films have been, as you say, fair?
Yeah. I think what depends, if they've served over there, you have a reality because you go over with a higher sense of purpose, and then you get there, and it's a real gut check because it's not going well. I don't care what any Republican or Bush administration person is saying. It's just not going well, and I've had lots of friends die. I've been blown up twice myself. So when you see a movie like Valley of Ella, it's refreshing, and honestly, it restores your sense of trust in the movie industry. And I would have to agree with your panelists that I wouldn't say that there's censorship. I didn't mean to suggest that, but it's just such a it's all about money. So thank you for your topic today. We appreciate it.
Well, thanks so much for the call, Eric. We'll have more on the complicated relationship between Hollywood and the military in a moment, and we'll get a perspective from the Army's man in Hollywood in addition to a film critic's perspective. What Iraq War movies have you seen? Did they seem believable or not? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Our email address, talk@npr.org. I'm Guy Raz. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Guy Raz here in Washington, D.C. Later in the hour, no kidding, baking up perfection. We'll get the secrets to the perfect chocolate chip cookie. And there's an email challenge for you. What's your baking secret? Are you willing to share it with people on national radio? Send it now to us in an email, talk@npr.org, and we'll read from some of them later in the hour. Right now, we're continuing our discussion on Hollywood and the Pentagon, and we're going to be talking with the Army's liaison to the Pentagon. Some movies get help from the military, and they get things like access to bases and tanks and planes, but some are denied. Why? And what that means for the movies we see today is our focus. Lieutenant Colonel Todd Brazil is the U.S. Army liaison to Hollywood. He's in our studios at NPR West, and here in Studio 3A is Julian Barnes, the LA Times Pentagon correspondent. We have actually a link to his article, The Iraq War Movie, Military Hopes to Shape Genre. That's at our blog, npr.org/blogofthenation. And again, we want to hear from you, especially listeners who've served in Iraq. What war movies have you seen? Did they seem believable? Let us know why or why not. 800-989-8255, our email address, talk@npr.org. And Lieutenant Colonel Todd Brazil, are you with us?
I am. How's it going, Mr. Russ?
Welcome to the show. You are the Army's liaison to Hollywood. You basically decide which movies should get Army help and bases and access to bases and equipment and which don't. Give us a sense of what you do on a day-to-day basis. Do you sort of read through hundreds of scripts? Do you visit movie sets?
You know, it really depends on what the season is. The script intake for the office begins a pretty elevated pace beginning in the fall, and that'll take you through what they call pitch season and the pilot episodes, and into spring with a lot of the features that are getting sort of ramped up to begin filming in the summertime. So during the time of the year that we're not working on features, we're devoting a lot of our time to working on documentary work.
Mm-hmm. Lieutenant Colonel Todd Brazil, I think a lot of listeners will be surprised to learn that the Army actually has a staff in Hollywood as a liaison to the film industry. What does it mean if there's a film made about the military that's, say, positive? I mean, how important is that for the Army?
Well, it's positive not only for the Army but for the American public. I mean, this Army is your Army. So any time that we can be part of a film that educates the American public about its Army, that's only good for everyone.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, what does it mean in real terms? I mean, does it mean anything for recruiting? Does it mean anything for reenlistment?
Well, certainly. I mean, a positive movie, or a movie that is at least honest, I believe goes directly to the zeitgeist and has a direct impact on how influencers and those who are looking at a career in the military perceive its Army.
So, I mean, how does it work? If you read a script and you like it, the Army agrees to work with the filmmaker?
That's mostly accurate. We work in tandem with the Department of Defense. They are they're the overall decision maker on whether or not we can move forward to support a picture. But the Army itself and before the DOD, the War Department has had a presence in Hollywood since at least the 30s, and actually before that to the first Academy Award winner with Wings. So it's a long-standing, long-existing relationship that's built on trust and relationships and a lot of give and take.
Mm-hmm. What's your sort of baseline for what you're looking for? I mean, do Iraq War films, for example, have to be pro-war to receive help from the Army?
Well, let me give you this. There's a tremendous amount of myth that's been sort of brewing up since the headline of the LA Times. War policy is hardly my business, nor is it the concern of any of my colleagues or myself. But soldiers and the Army are. And I can tell you that the thing that I look for most is accuracy and historical accuracy, specifically if it's based on a supposed historic event. But really, these days, I'm just looking for plausibility.
Mm-hmm. Lieutenant Colonel Todd Brazil is the Army's liaison to Hollywood. He's our guest. He's in our studios in Los Angeles. And Julian Barnes, the LA Times Pentagon correspondent, is with us in 3A. And Basil in Raleigh, North Carolina, or is it Basil, is on the line with us?
It's Basil.
Basil, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. My question is, and you had just mentioned, does the film have to have a positive spin for the military to work with them? I was calling about a film a while ago, Black Hawk Down. It was taken from Mark Bowden's book, and I was just curious the comments on that. Obviously, Operation Restore Hope didn't fare favorably, and we lost a lot of lives that day. But the military did work with them, and I was curious if that was just because it was maybe a tribute to those in the Special Forces and the Rangers who served in Somalia. And I'll take my answer off there.
Thanks so much. Colonel Brazil?
Well, that film was worked on and developed prior to my tenure in the office, but based on the historical notes that existed and from my impressions of watching it as a typical film goer when that film launched, you're right. It was not a movie that was based on a traditional win for the Army or the military, but what it did reflect are the Army's core values. And that's the sort of thing that it pays off tremendous dividends for the American public when you have an example of the Army doing the right thing because it's the right thing to do.
Todd Brazil, have you seen any films about the Iraq War, any Hollywood films, feature films, that you thought were any good?
Well, I don't know how, that's a difficult question to answer, so I'll just give you my gut, and that's not completely. Mm-hmm. here's the thing. A lot of these movies that are coming out are becoming increasingly accurate because you're dealing with a sort of coterie of technical advisors who are no longer basing their points of reference from their time in the military from Vietnam or in the 70s, and are now beginning to become educated with with increasing, now some of these guys that are working out here have increasingly large staffs of members of that have been in the military and have served in Iraq or Afghanistan. So some of the technical pieces are becoming increasingly accurate, but as far as the overall scope, the sort of broad brushstrokes of these soldiers represented as typically broken or these sort of hapless victims, mm-hmm. I have to tell you that I'm not too impressed so far.
An earlier caller mentioned the film In the Valley of Ella by director Paul Haggis, who, of course, directed Crash, and Julian Barnes, who's with us here in Studio 3A, spoke with Paul Haggis. Paul Haggis said that he actually wanted help from the Army, but ultimately decided against it because he felt that you all were trying to censor his script.
Well, I would challenge Mr. Haggis to what he defines censorship as, because that certainly doesn't meet any legal definition that I can come up with. I can tell you that what Mr. Haggis asked for us was material support, and what he asked for us could have been found in just about any military supplier who is deals directly with civilian enterprise. And the Army is not about to position itself as a competitor to civilian enterprise. What Mr. Haggis objected to in his 21 pages of notes, as he put it, were things such as directing him towards how the chain of command works or what appropriate ranks should be structured. And our objection had nothing at all to do with the military portrayal and everything to do with the a sort of asinine cover-up conspiracy to murder, a complicity to murder, and that the whole scope and size of the conspiracy was, to us, patently absurd and not something we were at all interested in taking part in. Mm-hmm.
Casey is on the line with us from Oklahoma. Casey, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having my call. I watched The Kingdom a while back with, I think, Jamie Foxx.
Mm-hmm.
And although it's, I think most of the guys in the movie are CIA, it really
FBI, seems like, I think.
There was military in the movie as well, and it took place in Saudi. But all the culture in the movie seems so realistic to me that, my Lord, you know, it pretty much took me back to that place when I was in Iraq and even when I was down in Qatar, right down to the traffic down there. It was like the Indy 500 at all times. And it was, you know, the taxis were right on, spot on, and it seemed to me like the streets were just terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in that movie they portrayed it like that because you don't know who is who and over there. And it just seemed to me those movies that are more technically sound, even with the culture, they have everything going with the military, but also the culture in which the war is taking place. Seems to me that it just makes it that much more realistic and gives the viewer a better opportunity to watch that. And my question was, Colonel, I didn't know if y'all also advise on that.
Thanks for the call, Casey. Colonel Brazil, did you take part in The Kingdom?
No, there was I saw the movie. I don't remember any military portrayal in it, and the producers never even approached us.
Mm-hmm. I want to read an email from Alarora in Eagle River, Alaska. She says, I love Transformers, the movie, for a variety of reasons, and one of those was the way the soldiers were portrayed in the movie. The soldiers are the heroes. I think she's probably talking about the airmen. Yet the military as an institution mostly gets in the way. The soldiers are smart and compassionate, while the bigwigs in Sector 7 are rude and pretty dumb. Now, Colonel Brazil, Transformers, of course, a big success for the Air Force. I mean, you can't watch that movie. In fact, an Air Force officer I spoke to called it an advertisement for the Air Force. How do you compete with the Air Force? It seems, you know, a lot much sexier kind of, you know, airplanes. And I mean, how do you get the Army in movies when you're competing with the Air Force, for example?
Well, I suppose how sexy you define an aircraft is whatever your orientation might be. We simply don't compete with the Air Force because they have a specific job. We have a specific job, as do the Navy, the Marine Corps, and the Coast Guard. So, and I will take some exception to your classification of Transformers as being an Air Force movie, because while it did feature some jet aircraft, I also recall quite a bit of Black Hawk. And by the way, the team commander is an Army officer.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't know how much of an Air Force movie that was.
And Julian Barnes from the LA Times, have you heard that as well from Air Force officers?
Yeah, I think the Army actually had the lead on advising Transformers, not the Air Force. But the Air Force beams even though I believe the aircraft were the bad guys in that movie. But I've had senior Air Force people just tell me that they love the portrayal of the F-22 and some other prized pieces of equipment in there. You know, sometimes those sort of details are the easy things to get right. The previous caller had talked about the kingdom and having the look and feel of the culture right. You know, what the filmmakers get when they go to the Army is they get that sort of relationship between the officers and the enlisted person, or how a family is told about the death of a soldier. If you know anything about the military, often those details are wrong in films. If a filmmaker goes to the military, that's the kind of thing that they can get right.
Julian, I know you're not a film critic. You cover the military. But have you seen any of the films, about the Iraq War? Have any of them seemed realistic? I mean, you spend a lot of time in Iraq. You've been embedded. Do any of them seem...
You know, I haven't seen all of the films. There are parts of them that seem realistic, but then if you know anything about the military, there'll be these little instances that are just off. You know, you wouldn't have a enlisted soldier speak to an officer like that. You would not have a family notified of a death. And, you know, you just... Often the relationships are sort of more complex, and people's opinions of the war are more complex than they're portrayed in some of these films. Mm-hmm.
Julian Barnes is the Pentagon correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. His article is titled "The Iraq War Movie: The Military Hopes to Shape the Genre." There's a link to it on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. He joined us here in Studio 3A. Julian, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Joining us now is Christopher Orr. He's the online film critic for The New Republic, and he's here with us in Studio 3A as well. Welcome, Christopher.
Thank you for having me.
Now you've seen many or most of these recent Iraq War films. Any of them good?
There's something of a mixed bag. I don't think any of them has really succeeded critically, and certainly none of them have succeeded particularly well commercially. They've all been something of a disappointment. You know, there are a few that were, I think, expected to compete for some Oscars that didn't, for the most part, do as well as expected. And as a commercial venture, perhaps unsurprisingly, they've done pretty badly so far.
And all generally overtly, almost all transparently political, right?
I think that's basically true. I think if you look at Hollywood's response to the Iraq War and the War on Terror, it sort of happened in three waves that I think of a little simplistically as the politics without the war, the war without the politics, and then finally the political war movies. And the first wave was a bunch of movies in 2005, these sort of highbrow conspiracy movies, like some of the highbrow conspiracy movies that we saw in the early 70s in the wake of Vietnam. There was The Interpreter, Syriana, Good Night and Good Luck, Munich, The Constant Gardener, and none of them were about the war, but the war was the subtext for all of them, the idea that there are pernicious forces in the world, that there are large government or corporate entities that are doing nefarious things in our name in the world. The second wave in 2006. You had a few fairly straight movies that I think tried to be very apolitical. 2006 and early 2007, you had World Trade Center and United 93 and A Mighty Heart, and they were all supposed to be relatively sort of documentary films. They weren't documentaries, obviously, but they were not political polemics. And then it was really in the fall of 2007 that you started getting the polemical movies, the very deliberately anti-war movies.
With us is also Lieutenant Colonel Todd Brazil. He's the Army's liaison to Hollywood. And Todd, I'd like to take a call from Robert, who's on the line with us from Miami, Florida. Robert, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks. And Lieutenant Colonel Brazil's got it right there. That is America's Army you're talking about. And as part of America's Army, we're all part of that. I'd like to get an idea of what the budget is for that staff out there in Los Angeles.
Todd, yeah, that's an interesting question, Lieutenant Colonel Todd Brazil. How much does this cost American taxpayers to be promoting the military in Hollywood?
Well, I hope you have your calculators because this number is pretty staggering. It costs the American taxpayer nothing. Mm-hmm. We charge based on the exact cost that it cost us the previous fiscal year. So if I'm going to put a UH-60 Black Hawk helicopter on set, I'm going to charge them the exact operational hourly cost that it that it cost us to maintain it the previous year. Same for the daily rate for a Humvee or a family of light tactical vehicles.
What is that? What is a daily rate for a Humvee now?
It's somewhere around 40. Please don't quote me, but it's between $40 and $55 a day.
Mm-hmm. So that means that the Army staff that's there on Wilshire Boulevard, wherever you folks are, that they're getting paid from fees you charge the movies, or who's paying?
No, sir. I'm sorry. I should have been more clear. As far as our actual operational budget is concerned, we do not have one. Our budget is based upon the pre-existing salaries that we already make. We have a civilian director now. Mm-hmm. I'm the outgoing deputy director. Mm-hmm. I'm a lieutenant colonel. And then we have a master sergeant who is, I hear your music.
Yeah. Robert, thanks so much for the call.
Same.
Lieutenant Colonel Todd Brazil is the Army's outgoing entertainment industry liaison. He joined us today from our bureau in Culver City. Todd, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Mr. Roz. It was a real honor.
We will wrap up our conversation about the military and the movies in a moment with Chris Orr. I'm Guy Raz. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. In a few moments, perfecting the perfect, the famous chocolate chip cookie, which gives us the perfect recipe for an email challenge. We want your baking secrets. Is it a special ingredient or a little touch of something extra? Email us, talk@npr.org. We'll get those in a few minutes. But right now, we're wrapping up our conversation about the Pentagon's influence in Hollywood and what it means for the war movies we see. Christopher Orr is with us. He's the online film critic for The New Republic. Christopher Orr, why have the Iraq War films done so badly at the box office?
Well, I think there are a couple of reasons. I think when you look at the current crop of Iraq War and War on Terror movies and compare them to the great Vietnam movies, which were also overwhelmingly anti-war movies, those movies, Coming Home, The Deer Hunter, Apocalypse Now, and then on to Platoon and Born on the 4th of July and so forth, all came out several years after hostilities had ended. I think they started in about 1978. Whereas these movies are happening in the thick of the war, and I think that this changes the relationship both for the filmmaker and for the audience. For the audience, I think you just don't have the emotional distance. I think people don't want to go to movies that remind them of the terrible things that are happening in Iraq. Certainly people who have loved ones over there don't really want to be reminded of the atrocities, and particularly not, in many cases in these movies, in ways that they might find disrespectful.
Have you found them to be one-sided?
Yeah, I think it's pretty hard to argue that they haven't been pretty uniformly anti-war. It's not a great surprise. The one exception I think you could argue would be The Kingdom, which came out last fall, which was a very pro-war, almost jingoistic script, although the director, Peter Berg, I think tried to tone that down a lot, and there's a peculiar ending where the movie takes a pretty strong anti-war shift in literally the last 90 seconds of the film.
I want to ask you about one movie, Lions for Lambs. I mean, Meryl Streep, Robert Redford, Tom Cruise, it bombed. How do you screw up a film with that kind of cast?
Well, I mean, I think there are reasons that have nothing to do with its political content. It was really just a movie with deep structural and narrative problems. It had three storylines, and two of the three storylines were people arguing across a desk, which is already trouble. But it's also a movie that didn't really seem to know a lot about the fields it was covering. It didn't understand how a journalist would interact with a senator. I thought the portrayal of a college professor and his student wasn't much better. And the third storyline, which is the one where anything actually happens, about two young soldiers who get lost in Afghanistan, was really portrayed almost as an afterthought. And that was the one storyline where something happened, but also the one storyline that didn't have any big stars.
Let's take a caller now. We've got Billy on the air with us from Roanoke, Virginia.
Hey, how are y'all doing?
How are you, Billy?
Sir?
Welcome.
I was just trying to comment on, how the movies have done so poorly about Iraq. And as an Iraq war veteran, honestly, personally, I don't want to see any of the movies because I'm honestly don't want it to invoke any of the, anguish or triumph or joy that I felt at the time. And especially if it's not taken in a realistic context, because honestly, the war is a 360-degree view of everything, of the good and the bad. And I think, if the military wants to support a 360-degree view of both the good and the bad, it could potentially, help us, especially a lot of us veterans coming back.
Christopher, go ahead. Sorry, Billy, go ahead.
No, but that's all I wanted to talk about. I'll take comments offline. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for the call, Billy. An understandable comment, a war veteran who simply doesn't want to relive those moments, maybe.
Well, and I can imagine, especially given what the earlier caller Eric had to say. I do think he's right. I think that a lot of the movies so far, and you know, of course, there's a finite amount you can get into any film, but even some of the better made movies, like I think In the Valley of Ella and Stop Loss, had a certain one-sidedness to them. In both of them, it's not just that a few of the veterans returning from Iraq or most of the veterans, but every single veteran returning from Iraq is deeply, deeply damaged. In the Valley of Ella, every single soldier is a murderer or an accomplice to murder or the victim of a murder. And Stop Loss, while somewhat more nuanced, still portrays four soldiers, every single one of whom has been fundamentally damaged in a way that the movie suggests they'll never recover from. Which I think is just the kind of exaggeration that makes it a little difficult to believe the movie. It's so obviously trying to make a polemical point that I think it undercuts its own argument to some degree.
Well, we could probably talk about this for hours and hours, and unfortunately we're out of time. But Christopher Orr is the online film critic for The New Republic. You can see links to his Iraq War movie reviews on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation, and you should check out that website, the New Republic website, to see his film reviews. He joined us here in Studio 3A. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Coming up, the search for the perfect cookie.